Great, thank you. So I think this presentation will actually follow quite nicely from the last one, and thanks for sticking it out until the end of the session. So I'm going to talk today about work that I've started relatively recently on vegetable farms in southeastern Michigan. And I have a lot of people to acknowledge for this work, mostly members of my lab group, my research group, as well as the 10 vegetable farms that are partnering in this study. So the motivation behind, I'm going to talk about sort of a broader picture of research on these 10 farms, and the motivation behind all of this work is evidence that legumes improve nitrogen use efficiency on farms. So the goal is to inform more sustainable organic nutrient management by relying on legume-based systems. And this is figure from work I did in the Corn Belt in 2013, showing a strong relationship between the proportion of nitrogen inputs to a field that come from legume sources and reduced surplus or excess nitrogen on those farm fields. We know that nitrogen fixation is energy intensive, so legumes don't have an incentive to rely on nitrogen fixation if nitrogen is readily available in the soil. So there's some self-regulation that goes on. Legumes are also a nutrient source that couple carbon and nitrogen within agroecosystems by fixing carbon and nitrogen together. Also, in instances where the legumes are overwintering, you're increasing the proportion of the year with growing roots within the agroecosystem. So building on that motivation, we set up a number of studies on these 10 farms, and the broader goal is that top one. We're looking at hairy vetch cereal rye bicultures across this farm gradient compared to a no-cover crop control, and the main question there is about nitrogen fixation inputs and short-term changes in soil health over a three-year period with the cover crop bicultures. What I'll talk about today is the second bullet, which was a screening study that was basically motivated by the farmers themselves. So as a negotiation for doing this other more manipulative work on their farms, they said, well, will you test out all of these different cover crop mixtures that are of interest to us? And these are cover crops that go in the cool season niche, and I'll talk about them in a minute. They're designed to mix plant functional groups. And so this is the reverse, looking at how does soil affect the performance of these cover crop mixtures across the farms. And a broader goal of this study is to share information with and among organic vegetable farmers who have varying levels of experience. So that's been really cool. I learn from them. They learn from each other. It's a nice setup. So there's a growing body of evidence also that cover crops can enhance multifunctionality, or at least growing interest in testing that hypothesis. So thinking about different ways in which we can increase agroecosystem diversity, right? And that winter niche, the sort of non-harvested crop niche, is a nice opportunity to do that. These two very recent papers by Finney and others looked at a full gradient of increasing species richness, and they found that that was a very weak predictor. So increasing species richness was a weak predictor of multifunctionality. However, they found that metrics or indices of functional diversity were much better indicators of multifunctionality across farms. So we're building on that approach and looking at these functionally diverse mixtures, and I think that makes sense, right? Because farmers tend to plan the biodiversity on their farms by selecting different types of species that can help them achieve particular management goals. So please don't read this whole table. I'm just putting it up here for myself to reference as I go throughout this. I made a cheat sheet for you. Like I said, there were sort of a number of different combinations that these farmers were interested in. So the take-home points are on the right there. There was a combinations of legumes, grass, and brassica families in the mixtures. And we also mixed winter and non-winter hardy species. And for some of these vegetable farmers, that was a slightly strange combination because they actually might do their rotation planning thinking about cover crops that winter kill and ones that don't. But the goal of putting those things together was to see if you can enhance multiple functions by combining species that achieve peak biomass in the fall with those that achieve their peak biomass in the spring after they overwinter. So I'll say just a couple of things about these treatments. There's a mixture of two clovers together with spring wheat, and then each of those clovers in a biculture with spring wheat. A pea mixture that was with daikon radish and oat compared to pea in monoculture. That's down here. I guess you're right that this pointer doesn't work very well. Okay, so the pea monoculture is down here. We looked at chickling vetch, which is also marketed as AC Green Fix, and farmers were interested in whether this could provide a powerful source of fall N. And the reason there are two treatments is that we looked at a low versus high chickling vetch seeding rate within the mixture because it's rather expensive seed. And then there was this lentil oat mustard mix where the lentils just completely bombed, so it ends up, I'll just categorize it as a mustard mix in the talk. We compared all of those to some grain monocultures. Those were largely for the method to measure nitrogen fixation, but also cereal rye is the most common cover crop in Michigan, so it's a nice comparison for some of the other treatments. And again, these were seeded at recommended rates that farmers would actually seed them at. So the entire goal of this study was to simulate realistic conditions on these working farms rather than to test other questions with this setup. We evaluated four ecosystem functions so far, so total above ground biomass production, which of course would relate to things like preventing erosion, nitrogen supply from biological nitrogen fixation by the legumes, nitrogen retention, or a sort of soil nitrogen scavenging function in biomass, and weed suppression, which was measured by comparing that weedy control, so weeds in the control minus weeds in the treatment. We predicted that the more functionally diverse mixtures would maximize multiple functions, whereas monocultures would maximize one function. I have not fully addressed this hypothesis yet, so there's still these data are sort of hot off the press. There's still a lot of analysis to do, but I'll start to show you some early results today. We predicted that P in the mixture would have a greater proportion of its nitrogen from fixation due to competition with other species in the mix, but the monoculture would have a greater total nitrogen, fixed nitrogen input. That biomass of the legume species themselves would be the strongest predictor of nitrogen fixation inputs, and that measures of soil health across this gradient of different soil fertility levels would predict measures of performance across the farm gradient. I'll fly through this randomized complete design, four replicates, 10 farms. They were planted mid-August, 2.4 by 2.4 meter plots, so relatively small, but these are pretty small-scale diversified vegetable farms. Sampled biomass in fall and spring, and we did a really thorough baseline soil sampling before planting where we measured a number of different soil variables that we thought might be good indicators of soil health, from inorganic nitrogen to potentially mineralizable nitrogen, which is an anaerobic incubation that gets at sort of accessibility of the organic matter to microbial decomposition and nitrogen release. Light and occluded fractions of particulate organic matter. So those are particular pools of organic matter that have been shown to correspond with relatively short-term changes in management. Total organic matter, total soil carbon and nitrogen, macro, micronutrients, pH, and texture. I also wanted to say these farms all have pretty similar intensive tillage histories, so typical of diverse vegetable farms. I'm not going to show this, so we measured nitrogen fixation with the natural abundance method. So let's get to some of the results in terms of the functions of the system. So these are the biomass functions, total biomass, and weed suppression. Combining fall and spring, and the reason for combining them is because the mixtures combine species where peak biomass was in the fall for some and spring in the others. So we were able to model the biomass function and the weed suppression function using a linear mixed effect model where biomass is a function of treatment as a fixed effect and then rep nested in farm as a random effect. And the goal of this sort of coarse analysis was just to say which of these treatments were sort of different from one another in terms of these different functions of interest to farmers. So in terms of total biomass production, the treatments with rye unsurprisingly took the lead. Interestingly, these two chickling vetch mixtures here, so this was chickling vetch rye bicultures, those were not significantly different from these treatments that had crimson clover, nor were they significantly different from the weeds. So it was a very weedy year. So if we look at weed suppression, the take home for me here is that, as expected, rye was the better weed suppressor, or near the top in terms of ordering them, but not actually significantly different from some of these bicultures, or from the mustard mix in treatment three. So I think this is worth considering in terms of opportunities for multifunctionality, perhaps. In terms of the nitrogen function, so nitrogen retention, here this is just total biomass nitrogen accumulated by the different treatments, so that's combining soil nitrogen and legume nitrogen fixation. This is the sort of soil scavenging function here if we subtract out the proportion of mixture N that came from nitrogen fixation, because that really represents a new fertilizer of nitrogen. It's not recycling of soil nitrogen that was already there. So if you look at total biomass nitrogen accumulation, the mixture that had two different clovers was the greatest, although it wasn't significantly different from the crimson clover biculture, this higher chickling vetch seeding rate, or the P mixture. In terms of soil nitrogen retention, the rye was the greatest, but was not significantly different from the rye mixes or from the mustard mix. So maybe, again, some opportunities for promising combinations there. Biological nitrogen fixation, so this is showing in the green portion of the bar the new nitrogen that came from fixation, and the other color is the nitrogen from the soil, and this is for fall versus spring. And the main take-home here is that nitrogen fixation inputs weren't super high in terms of the average result across farms. The average result for chickling vetch was sort of disappointing. This was only 50% of chickling vetch N from fixation, and just not the levels of N input that we were expecting. The prediction for pea and monoculture having a greater fixed N input in the compared to the mixture was true in the fall. But not a big difference, just 19 versus 13 kilograms, and that did not hold in the spring. So in the spring, the ranges were 33 to 60 kilograms of fixed nitrogen from the mixtures. But again, if you're thinking about these mixtures in terms of multiple functions simultaneously, and perhaps you don't need 250 kilograms of nitrogen in a particular year, this might be a nice way to think about it. Also, given that we're testing hairy vetch in this other study, the farmers wanted me to look at these other legumes that they sort of less commonly grow on their farms. Only a few farms in the fall followed the predicted pattern that I laid out in the beginning in terms of the pea mixture versus monoculture, so I think that's sort of interesting, again, getting at this question about why are these things different across different farms. So if you look on the right here in these panels, the top one is the percent of nitrogen that came from fixation, and you can see that it's higher in the mixture than in the monoculture, so likely due to competition with other species in the mix. But if you look at the bottom portion, the total fixed nitrogen input was greater in the pea monoculture, where there was more pea biomass. And then on the left there, it's showing the total biomass of the mixture, where the pea mixture had greater biomass on two farms than the pea monoculture. So I think this highlights some opportunities and trade-offs that farmers might consider when selecting mixes. But for me, the bigger question is, well, why is this pattern appearing on just three farms or not the others? So we need to start to look at some of these predictors that might explain differences across the farms based on their management histories or soil fertility levels. So by far the strongest predictor of legume biomass or of biomass nitrogen fixation was legume biomass. And this is a result that we've seen in other studies. So very strong relationship between legume biomass and fixed. I want to show this to see the huge variability across the farms, right? So some of the farms, you see one with 250 kilograms of fixed nitrogen from winter pea. Chickling vetch, pretty much scattered on the low end here, but we did have one farm with a chickling vetch and fixation input of 70 kilograms. So understanding what explains this variability is important. In this case, biomass drives it, but then what drives the variation in legume biomass? I have not had time to look at that model yet, but I'll show you two results from just total biomass in the different mixtures. So one way that I'm approaching this with all of those sort of rich soil predictors that we have across the farms is to set up stepwise regression models where we put in all of those soil variables and remove ones that are correlated with one another, and then select the model that has the lowest AIC for the different functions. These were some interesting sort of early results that have jumped out at me. I still have a lot of work to do in terms of going through all of these systematically. So for spring wheat, which reached its peak biomass in the fall, it was biomass was predicted pretty strongly by free particulate organic matter, so a nice indicator of sort of soil fertility status. Weeds, the strongest relationship was with phosphorus concentration and the size of the occluded particulate organic matter pool. Mustard mix, again with free palm, but had an interesting negative relationship with soil C to N. So I'm still sort of mulling. Oh, well, I guess that makes sense. Maybe an indicator of soil fertility status as well. Spring biomass, just highlight a couple here almost at the end. So for weeds, the strongest predictors were phosphorus again, and this time the free particulate organic matter pool. And for the red clover mixture, phosphorus, which makes sense for a legume, but then the C to N of the F-palm pool. So as it's increasing, biomass increases. So this is one I'm also digesting, maybe suggesting that as nitrogen, labile nitrogen availability is lower, biomass is increasing for some reason, maybe for the legume. So I put these up here just to highlight that it is a relatively rich data set and a lot of opportunities for looking at how soil variables might predict the performance of these different mixtures on farms. And the next step for me is to look at this in terms of actual species in the mix. So I have not yet looked at what were the combinations in terms of proportion of each species in the mix and how that varied across each farm, and then looking more closely at the legumes themselves. So preliminary conclusions, because this is all relatively new. So did functionally diverse mixtures maximize multiple functions, whereas monocultures maximize one? Well, maybe in some cases the results vary across farms. We still need to understand that variability and analyze the data set in other ways. The pea mixture will have greater percent of biomass from N from fixation, only on some farms. Pea monoculture will have a greater total fixed N input, yes, but in the fall. Legume biomass will be the strongest predictor of N fixation inputs, yes. And the measures of soil health did predict mixture performance across the gradient, although there's quite a bit more work to do there. So I'll just end with a plug for, I think we really have a strong need for more of these on-farm studies. They're messier, they're harder to coordinate, they take a long time. But really in terms of having results that are relevant for farmers, given the sort of realistic or real-world conditions in which they're managing their farms, I think it's important, as well as what the last speaker was saying at the end in terms of being able to develop predictive models as well as better management tools for farmers, you know, based on their soil conditions to determine mixtures that will achieve particular management goals. So I'll rethank the same people and also mention collaborators at MSU, Dan Brainerd and Sig Snap, as well as funding from the Ceres Trust. I'd be happy to take any questions if there's a minute.
So we're out of time for this particular speaker's questions, but we do not have another speaker after her, so I'd like to first just open it up for questions for our most recent speaker, but then if folks want to stick around and ask questions to any of the other speakers that stay in the room, I do see some, a lot are gone, but some are still remaining in the room, and we could certainly have a discussion.
Rebecca. For those of us who don't have lab access, are there particular commercial tests out there that would help us conduct further on-farm studies?
That's a wonderful question for some other people who I see in the room. So I know a lot of people who are actively working on trying to improve soil health testing and just the accessibility of those types of tests. But yeah, I think that's a big bottleneck, that for farmers, when they send off their soil sample for the traditional chemical test, it doesn't necessarily have this information that's the strongest predictors in the model, right? Even total organic matter just gets thrown out sort of every time. And that's not shocking given the heterogeneity of organic matter. So I think that, yeah, that's a really important goal, thinking about which of these tests might be a priority and how can we make them more readily accessible to farmers. Yeah, I don't. Does anyone else in the back want to try? I know people in the back working with potentially mineralizable carbon and permanganate oxidizable carbon, potentially mineralizable nitrogen. Are you doing anything with mycorrhizae, Jude? I'm just going to put people on the spot here. Punt this question because it's not my. Anyone want to shout out any?
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of them are pretty labor intensive, but the mineralizable carbon and permanganate oxidizable carbon are rather simple. So those are ones that might be more accessible. Particulate organic matter, the ones I showed here, are really labor intensive and sort of expensive. So those are finding things that correlate with them is a good priority. Julie?
So I'm wondering a little bit about your choice of sampling in the fall.
Yeah, and I didn't have time to show other figures, but basically I've looked at all of those services separately first by fall and spring, and this is harder to explain in a talk because not all of these treatments make a lot of sense to analyze in the fall and not all of them in the spring. So one way to look at it is to just completely look at it separately in fall versus spring and think about sort of farmers who are managing for the fall cover crop niche or for the overwintering niche. The reason when I combine them or sum them together, there's a tiny bit of double counting for the overwintering species. And I did one analysis where I took some of those out, and it didn't really make much of a difference, and it's much more work. Yeah. In the back. Well, would that be based on that slope doesn't make a lot of sense. That's a good question. I haven't looked at that. Can anybody do that math quickly looking at this figure?
I know one number that's out there is about 30 to 50 kilograms per metric ton. And what I like about this data set is this is a real range of uses just on cover crops. Mm-hmm. The other one that I'm using is across a lot of different acres, so I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Yeah, I'll be sure to include that metric. That's a good one.
Can't you just get that 4% nitrogen at the biomass, nitrogen group at the biomass? It's like a 3%, 4% nitrogen content between that and one ton.
Well, so that varies by species. So like in the fall here, those numbers were roughly 50%, like 50% of biomass and from fixation. But yeah, that is another important number to look at.
That was my question from this slide. So how did you differentiate which nitrogen came from, like the nutrients in the soil?
So using the natural abundance method, so you can set up a mixing model. We use the grass species as the reference species in this model, so that would be the delta 15N of the ref, and then take the 15N to 14N ratio of the legume and compare them. And we used a B-value study in a greenhouse where we inoculated the legumes with the same rhizobia.
I have a question. Some of us in the room have actually been debating this biological N fixation question and its merits. And so some of the points that have been brought up is that as you work in, you know, more coarse soils that are lower fertility, generally more biomass from a legume is going to translate into more nitrogen content, and you would expect that more and more of that is coming from BNFs just because it's a low fertility site. And then if you're at a high fertility site, or you're, you know, where you have a lot of soil organic matter, you're going to tend to get much lower biological N fixation, right? Because you're going to have higher soil fertility, and so the legume is not going to be fixing as much nitrogen. It's going to be getting from the soil. So what's the point then? I mean, why do we need to measure biological N fixation?
Well, with that last point, I think I actually found the opposite in terms of if total legume biomass is the greatest overall predictor of fixed N input, then it's actually on the higher fertility sites where you're getting more fixed N in this case. Because the proportion of N from the atmosphere, even though it can vary widely, it's actually swamped by the biomass in terms of the amount that you get. If that makes sense, I can show you this figure again. So, I mean, in terms of, I guess a first response would just be, for me, it's really important to be able to quantify fixed N inputs particularly for farmers who are relying on legume nutrient sources. Partly going back to that figure I showed in the beginning, so that was a mass balance figure. And that's one of the best environmental performance metrics that we have in terms of understanding nitrogen use efficiency in fields and its susceptibility to loss through different loss pathways is from an ecosystem ecology perspective. So unless we can quantify the total nitrogen inputs to that field, we're sort of at a loss, and we have a lot of ways of maybe estimating that, but I think we need to do one or the other. So what I was saying here is that if the, like in this case, you can see on the fall, even though it's not a wonderful, like a high rate of nitrogen fixation, the pea grown in monoculture had, well, it's hard to see in that figure, but it had a slightly lower percent of nitrogen from the atmosphere because it was being sort of lazy, I guess you could put it that way. And the pea in the mixture had a slightly higher proportion of nitrogen from the atmosphere because of competition with other species. But in terms of the total nitrogen input, in this case, it's totally driven by the amount of peas that are there, the pea biomass, and the monoculture had more fixed N input. So that proportion that comes from the atmosphere can matter little if you have big differences in biomass. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, I guess it gets back to what I'm getting at, though. It still comes back down to biomass, right?
Yeah.
I mean, biomass is how much N is going
exactly.
In.
Exactly. So if we can have good predictors of biomass, then I think that's a great way to estimate it. And I think below ground biomass is also, there's some people here working on that. That's a big area that we need more numbers for as well. Any more quick? People are welcome to leave, too, if you have to go. Then we're going over.
Okay, well, great. All right, thank you.
Thank you.